Akron, Ohio. This is episode 189 of On the Tropes, not 187, which I feel like we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
Sir quoted something, and I'm like, that's not what the lyric is. Because he was quoting, what was it?
187 on a...
No. What's
the... Deep Cover.
Yeah.
The song Deep Cover by Snoop, Doggy Dogg, and Dr. Dre.
That was when he still had the doggy.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably, and it's also, it was for the film Deep Cover, starring Lawrence Fishburne, who I think, this is, might have been one of the early movies where he's called Lawrence Fishburne, not Larry Fishburne.
Yeah, like in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, which is a pretty good Fishburne. Larry Fishburne's good. He's in King of New York.
Yeah, which Fishburne is in Pee-wee's Playhouse? Is it Larry or Larry?
Yeah, it's probably Larry. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem Lawrence-y. Anyways, my point of reference for a lyric, a nearly identical lyric, and I'm sure purposely pulled an homage. I forget the exact date, but I believe it's April 26, 1992, mm-hmm. from the band, the legendary 90s band, Sublime.
Hmm.
I believe it was track 5 on their self-titled album. It might have been track 6. I don't remember. I think it started off with Garden Grove and then What I Got and then Wrong Way and then a couple others. And
Santoria's, I applaud you for a little bit. Taking ownership of this.
I think Santoria's track 6.
Not for the knowledge. We're taking ownership of the knowledge.
Right. I feel like I have to disclose, because I said I think you're both right, but you're talking about two different songs.
Well done.
And that was where...
You recognize it in the moment?
Yeah. Really wasn't time to... I didn't really want to get into it. But.
It was track 5, but the date was April 29th, 1992. Parentheses, Miami.
You act like you know what's up. 2 days off.
What's...
Well, it's important for the sake of what the song's about.
What is this stupid episode about? Hold on. I'm Nick.
And Kyle.
Wait, hold on.
I'm Sir.
We're talking about Evil Plan. You know what it is.
I'm Eva.
And Kyle.
Maybe my evil plan was just to derail this whole episode with talk about Sublime. Sublime was good, though, right?
No.
I enjoyed them. And I know the lyrics to Wrong Way.
Yeah,
we enjoyed.
I'll own that.
If we enjoyed, it was a time, and it doesn't need to be enjoyed anymore.
That's what I'm saying. It had been enjoyed. We don't need to be jamming to it now. But
there's a lot of stuff like that. Like, I have Sirius right now because I think if you have a trial, if you try XM Radio and you try to cancel. Like, I think the person on the other line is being threatened if they don't keep you. Like, I basically had 3 months for 25 cents or something.
Oh wow!
So I've been listening to satellite radio and there's a couple channels that are 90s channels, and a song will come on and I'm like, oh wow! I'll be with my daughter, oh, this is a great song, and she'll be like, wait, Dad, didn't you say this song it's bad? It talks about this misogyny and da-da-da.
You're like, yeah, it's from the '90s,
right? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's that's pretty much every single song from back then. Every one of them's horrible. Yeah,
Wrong Way, I'm pretty sure, is about a preteen prostitute.
It's
and incest,
which
as well,
it was just a horrible.
Which
era.
Preteen
prostitute? You're just determined to keep talking about Sublime on this, aren't
do
you?
Do show up in number 5 on my evil plan list.
I think I have one also.
Is it the same?
I don't know.
Plan?
If she's a preteen. I think she's a little older.
She might be a. Is it a? A movie that involves a man who drives a car?
No.
Okay.
The weird thing is that Sublime is on my 4th
Whatever. We're talking about Evil Plan. What are some evil plans? Because I think we know. We don't have to explain what an evil plan is to people.
That's self-evident.
Yeah.
I know we're not doing foreshadowing this week. We might be doing it next week. And I don't mean to foreshadow that because I ain't got no crystal ball. I had $1 million.
Oh, excellent.
What's interesting
Sublime
about the TV
is the new soup, I think.
I hate myself right now.
The TV tropes page is interesting because I think they focus more on the motivation than the actual plan itself, which my lists are more the
view
plan,
the intricate
kind, yeah, or what they're trying to, because a lot of them are just so and so is trying to take over the world, and that's okay. But I like it when it's more intricate and involved for the most part.
The TV tropes page covers all the different style. Subtropes, like you said, yeah, yeah. Why are they doing it? What's their end goal? Like, almost like, what's their end
but
goal?
But yeah, one of my examples, they're like, yeah, this one isn't a very like flashy version of it, because they're just doing it for revenge against one other person. I'm like, I don't mind. The way he did it was cool. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And then MacGuffin, I think, is one that shows up a lot where the evil plan is to get the hard drive or microprocessors.
Unobtainium.
I don't know what a microprocessor is. I assume it's like a regular processor, only
very, very small.
If I know anything about Latin prefixes, it's just like a regular processor only.
What is happening?
But is it turns out Nick doesn't know anything.
Yeah. Do you guys want to jump into that?
Whose idea was this list also?
Oh, it was mine. Well, yeah, I guess I just... I will say that this episode and next week's episode are my version of next week's episode. That's pretty much all I'll say for now.
What?
I have my own evil plan right now.
Oh.
Oh.
Uh-uh.
All right. Kyle, what's your number five? I'm like worried. Maybe that. Maybe when we said that the show isn't going to end, it is going to end soon because Sarah's going to.
I'll just do the one that I mentioned earlier. Raul Silva in Skyfall, purposely getting captured to was he like hijack or he puts a virus in their system and then. I just thought he was like one of the more interesting recent Bond villains, and his motivation is kind of like he doesn't really want to take over. He just kind of wants to get revenge on M and. Bond, but he'd fall under the sort of tragic villain because of why he is the way he is. But yeah, it's I really liked what's Javier his name? Yeah, Javier Bardem as that role. His hair is really gross, though.
Yeah, he does gross hair for like a very very handsome man. He does gross hair better than anybody.
Did we do a hair themed trope? I know we did. Didn't we do beards?
Oh man, why didn't we do a hair episode?
Yeah, so, that's a good idea.
That would be
a
great idea.
Write it down.
Did you see a first episode of Stranger Things season 3?
No, I didn't watch the first through last episode of Stranger Things season
2. Yeah, it just came out thick on the 4th.
Man, do I need to watch season 2?
I didn't really like it, but you do need to see it.
No. I felt like, I thought season 2 was really weak.
Yeah, some people love the crap out of it. It was like really well done, but I just didn't care about it as much as the first season.
I basically realized that it's not for me. Not that, and what I mean is like I might like or dislike any of the seasons. However, especially once I realized how much my daughter loves it, I'm like, it just kind of doesn't matter whether I think it's that great. Like,
so your daughter,
I respect it,
loves it
at a technical level. Yeah, she loves it.
Yeah, that's surprising me because I thought it leaned so much on nostalgia. I didn't know how it would play with it.
It's caught like her and her whole grade. Like they were just crazy about that thing.
Yeah, visually and the music is really good in it. But I don't really care about any of the characters anymore. So then what would be your number five?
The Borg from Star Trek The Next Generation. There's a sub trope called the assimilation plot, and that is these guys to a T. They just want to assimilate, add your biological and technological distinctness to their own. They are Borg.
Well, that's resistance what we all want to do, right?
So
breaking stuff. Eva, what's your number?
I don't have a number five, so I'm just going to defer. I'm just going to skip to you.
Well, I'll just talk about the board for a minute. Tim, have you seen any of Discovery yet?
Not yet.
Well, I guess this is major spoilers.
I heard that they're going to reset the timeline.
Well, major spoilers for Discovery listeners. Just kind of, this will only take a few seconds. That the Borg factor, I mean, the season 2 is very much about the Borg in like a very cool way,
crazy,
very interesting. Like, kind of, if you've ever wondered where they might have come from,
you know that they're a great villain that everybody since TNG, except maybe I don't know if DS9 played with them at all, but everybody since like TNG era has been like, we have to have a bunch of Borg stuff in there.
Yeah,
That's awesome. Yeah.
My number five, I'm going to go with Senator Palpatine. And a lot of it's because I saw a meme a few months ago when the whole, like, I don't know, it was some right-wing figure did something, like, on just a base level of humanity, and people were like, oh, well, you know, say what you want about him as a person. However, he's really, like, you know, he's a great statesman or something like that. And then there was, like, a meme about Palpatine. Like, say what you want about, like, his record. Yeah, he was, like, he was a shrewd statesman. And then I kind of thought about it, and I was like, yeah, I guess for Palpatine, that's true. Not for any of the current Republicans, yeah. Yeah. Man, he had some plan. Nick, what's your number five?
So speaking of the song The Wrong Way, or is it just Wrong Way by Sublime? My number five is Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver. His evil plan is basically to assassinate a senator to impress a woman he likes. And instead of doing that, he ends up getting into it with, I guess, differently unsavory characters, and is seemingly rewarded for these things. So I just like that his evil plan really makes no sense at all in terms of trying to accomplish what his most, like, obvious goal of doing it is.
So I'm not supposed to be impressed when people assassinate people for me?
No. And I don't think that Jodie Foster was either. So what I like about this is that his motivations make absolutely no sense. He's a psychopath. But he's portrayed so well that someone actually basically just did what he did, who was also a psychopath, to impress somebody who would in no way be impressed. A very young Jodie Foster probably would not have been at all impressed if John Hinckley would have actually killed Reagan.
Wait a minute. So I knew that he did that for Jodie Foster. I didn't realize he did that in reaction to Taxi Driver.
Well, it would be hard to suggest that he didn't.
Yeah, I just didn't
think of it in terms of...
I don't know for a fact that he like saw it and was like, got it.
I think it is. I almost feel like there is some anecdotal evidence about him.
Because I thought, like, he was also Catcher in the Rye, was he not?
They all.
Yeah. For some reason, I think there is some evidence that he had seen it. And
yeah, I'm sure he had, or it was in the zeitgeist at least. But yeah, it's just a good way of showing that maybe you watch it and you're like, oh, this doesn't make any sense that this guy would do this to impress that woman. And it's like, well, yeah, it's kind of the point. He's not a rational person.
That's not the first time in that film that he's done something that shows that he has a fundamental misunderstanding of what other people want.
Yeah.
Or would appreciate, like, on a date.
Yes.
Like cheese on apple pie.
No, cheese on apple pie is right.
thank you. anyways, yeah, cheese on apple pie. Travis Bickle does it.
Always right. Always the right move.
Odd and we all. Kyle, what's your number four?
My number four is Vitalis from A Plague Tale, which I just finished like a few days ago. A really amazing kind of an indie game for PlayStation 4, and it might be on Steam too. He's the Grand Inquisitor, and the game takes place, I think it was 1348, and he's basically trying to kidnap this kid and take his blood because he has this thing called the Prima Macula, and it's just a great adventure. But this guy has a horrible plan and wants to really do bad things with this thing and this kid's blood. And yeah, it's a crazy game. It's just been on my mind lately. Themo, what would be your number four?
My number four is from Professor Chaos, which is Butter's character in South Park. And there's a whole episode where he's trying to come up with an evil plan that has not yet been done by the Simpsons, Bart Simpson. It's called Simpsons Did It, is the name of the episode. And it's good.
It's good.
We're losing Thema. Oh, no.
We're good. But yeah, it's a great episode, and I think one of the reasons I like it so much is that it talks about how a lot of, as far as like trying to find originality in stories, it's not necessarily bad to be inspired and try to evolve something as opposed to come up with something from nothing, because you're going to be influenced by stuff, and it's going to have been thought somewhere else. It doesn't mean you can't make your own mark on it.
I've never really, I mean, that one was cute in moments, but personally, I never liked when an episode or an installment of something is obviously about the writers not being able to come up with something.
Oh.
Like, when Calvin and Hobbes used to do it, when he had, like, a monster under his bed, he had to keep throwing garbage down there so it would leave him alone. And I remember in one of those, like, annotated collections where Watterson said, yeah, this is because I couldn't think of anything, and I was just throwing people garbage just to get work done. And part of me is, like, kind of offended by it. Like, what we talked about when we talked about Game of Thrones. Like, I don't want to be kind of, like, criticized as a viewer.
It depends on how it's done. They have another one where they're like in a writing room and they can't come up with like what to do for like their school's like TV news.
Is this the cough medicine one?
No, it was they were fighting against like the cute puppy channel.
Yeah, they all started drinking cough medicine.
Oh, I don't remember that. I just remember Carmen kept going like, we could always do crab people, which they had done in an earlier episode, and it's clearly a glimpse into them.
Yeah,
thinking of what they think of
that kind of people. That kind of level, I just never really like in the story.
But it usually results in pretty memorable episodes, though, right?
I dig it. I don't know.
Yeah. Simpsons did it as a pretty like that's something that's been memed beyond.
Well, they're also South not doing Park. It all the time yeah. either. Hopefully, so
that's a good point. Yeah, if it was a staple, like, yeah, we don't know what we're doing.
Like those,
trust in the authors.
I mean, it's probably not the same, but those interdimensional cable episodes, those don't seem like they ran out of ideas, but they feel like they have like too many ideas and they're trying to get them all done. And like, there's no story, like through line of all the stories, but they just like want to get these ideas out.
Fumbus. Yeah.
Anyway.
What's your number four?
My number four is The Bride Wore Black. It's a 1968 film by Truffaut that's based on a story by Cornell Woolrich. And a lot of the, like, TV Tropes lists, like, revenge stories as evil plans. And I don't know if all revenge stories are an evil plan or not. I guess killing somebody always is evil.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Depends, you know, on a purely moral level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It depends.
Yeah. So this is about a woman whose husband was killed right before they were to get married. And so she goes on a mission to kill all of the people who were involved in his death. She either wears all black or all white. It's Jean Moreau from Elevator to the Gallows and Jules and Jim, I think, too.
Yeah, and Chimes at Midnight.
Yep. And
I love Elevator to the Gallows.
Me too.
That's so good.
And this is a film that Truffaut, like, when it was released, it was really badly reviewed. And Truffaut said, yeah, I get it. there's also things about it that he really didn't like it, and things that he wishes he had done differently. So if you want to watch a movie and think about while you're watching it that the director really didn't like how it turned out, it's The Bride Wore Black. So what's your number four?
I just realized that I have seen that movie. Like, it was a movie I got from Netflix back in the DVD era, The Bride Wore Black.
Me too.
That's good.
She was married to William Friedkin for 2 years. Interesting.
Interesting. Also, Elevator to the Gallows is pretty fantastic. I just saw that recently. I'm going to go with Amon. I started from Legend of Korra. There's when I was looking over the TV Tropes website, a lot of the ones were basically evil plan for utopian values, basically, or that's not exactly what it's called, like to get to a utopian result. And there's a villain in Legend of Korra named Amon that's trying to basically make it to where regular people have the same amount of power as the Benders in like the Legend of Korra universe, which is awesome to me. So they call themselves the Equalists. I just think it's great. Later, it turns out his evil plan is a lot more kind of self-centered yet. It still doesn't change that all those people were kind of mobilized by this seemingly evil plan that's really like that needs to happen in our society. Yeah. Nick, what is your number four?
My number four is the character Doc Hopper from the Muppet movie.
Doc Hopper.
He just he just wants to get Kermit, this walking and talking frog, to be the spokesman for his Doc Hopper's French fried frog legs.
All I can see are thousands of little frogs on tiny crutches.
And his plan is kind of a crazy one, because he's trying to get a frog to be the spokesperson for something that, as you said, would injure or maim.
I think it kills him. I don't think we really like leave him live
with on crutches. On crutches. Well, I don't know. Best case scenario is they walk out needing crutches. Worst case scenario, oh boy.
I mean, it's a boon for the medical device industry for tiny amphibians.
The tiny medical device industry.
He really goes out of his way to try to secure this endorsement, and then when failing that, he tries to have him brainwashed. He tries to have him shot with some kind of cattle proddy.
Oh yeah, this
thing from that guy.
Scary.
Which
he calls it a zapper, doesn't he? Something like
is that the thing that Mel Brooks has? Is that the zapper? There's he goes a long way to try to get this endorsement for his restaurant. It's he's an evil man. Doc Hopper. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three is Lord Business in Lego Movie. Using the Kraggle to make things not move, which I kind of like that they were able to make something like crazy glue, like scary to to this world of Legos, and it makes sense because it would be scary to them. Like, it's cool, and the reveal at the end of like what is like that they're just playing Legos is cool, and the movie might go with the theme of getting better with age. I don't think I loved it when I first saw it, but I think it was just because it was too fast and chaotic. But it's a cool movie, and his plan to take over just by gluing things down is a cool idea. Then what would be your number three?
My number three is a family of scientists named the Foresters, and their evil plan is to drive an individual insane by subjecting them to bad movies from Mystery Science Theater 3000. And I don't know, like my favorite part would be when they would reference this every now and again when, say, like Pearl Forrester is going up to, you know, become certified by the Union of Mad Scientists, and it would be self-referential that they're a mad scientist. I still love that. Anyhow, the Foresters is my number three.
We saw Felicia Day in the Detroit airport.
Yeah.
And then I didn't say hi because we walked past and I was like, oh, that was Felicia Day. And Nellie was like, no, it wasn't. And I looked it up, and she was in town for some convention or something. Ugh.
And okay.
Then I didn't say hi because I don't interact well with people.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I go back and forth on her performance. She's good in the MST3K, though. Mm. Her acting in general, I'm not a fan of.
I also didn't say hi to John Waters when I had the chance.
John Waters, I would have regretted if I were you. You should regret that.
Yeah, I kind of do.
You might have regretted saying hi to him.
Yeah. See? You can't.
Absolutely.
To quote Troy from Community, you can't disappoint a picture. None of you get that. But it's a great reference that I wish at least one of you would get. You can't disappoint a picture. It's because he meets LeVar Burton, but he never wanted to meet LeVar Burton. Because you can't disappoint a picture.
So he's worried he's going to disappoint LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. It's how we go through life, just trying not to disappoint LeVar Burton.
I mean, I still feel like I don't read enough books for his liking.
Yeah.
He has a podcast where he reads you short stories. LeVar Burton reads. I'm subscribed, but I haven't listened yet. Eva, your number three.
My number three is The House of the Devil from 2009, Ty West's retro horror film.
That's right. Yeah.
And what I like about it is there's an evil plan in there that we don't really ever figure out. You figure it out by the very end of it, what they're trying to do, that they're trying to, like, impregnate this girl. But there's a lot of details in there that are never fleshed out in the film. I think it's, I only saw it like maybe a couple months ago on Joe Bob's Last Drive-In, and it's one of the few films that as he was presenting it, you can tell how much he genuinely respects and enjoys the film, not just because it's got, like, you know, somebody's boobs are out or there's a good, like, death or something. That he talks about how, like, the sound in the film is really powerful and that's what makes you scared, because there's a whole big stretch of this movie where nothing's really happening. And I was really creeped out by it and scared by it in a few moments, and that's hard to do in a movie that has, like, commercial breaks. You know, that I was, like, uneasy after watching it.
I haven't rewatched it because I found I was disturbed by the end. I don't know why. Like, it's pretty standard.
Yeah, it's fare. Nothing you haven't seen in another film, but
for some reason, I think because there's, not to jump in.
You're fine.
I think because of those, he did the same thing with me in The Innkeepers, where you have these long periods where you're just character building and you get to really like the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she's dancing around the house to like this 80s soundtrack. It's like, oh, I could have been that kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's a great scene too, because it really, who hasn't had that experience?
Yeah.
You know, and I think like, just the T. West in general, like he does this thing that I think was what makes Tarantino great, what made Walter Hill great. That they pick good projects. You know, each one of his films feels different. It feels like something, yet it feels different, yet it feels like something that's personal to him. I really loved that movie. I think the ending, it reminded me of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It was an emotional, like, just blow for me. But, like, oh, man. This character, you felt like she was so close to getting out of the situation. And then you see that, and you're just like, wow. So just kind of that existential horror of just like, wow, it's just a horrible situation to be in, this character. So my number three is Michael Corleone. I've been watching The Godfather a lot because I have YouTube TV and it comes on television like all the time. The Godfather is like on some channel or other. It's like always on. And man, in both movies, just an incredible evil plan. And what I think the thing that stood out to me this time was the it's not a trial, the investigation, the Senate investigation. And there's a moment where Michael Corleone starts reading like his statement, and he's getting like his war record and his total lack of any like felonies, of any charges of any kind. And you see Kay Corleone's face just start to change, and like the acting in this film is like I've really come to like notice these like little moments where her face, you know, and she, that's when she comes to that realization that like nothing that happens, they're never gonna stop him, that like he's gonna get out of this, that she just kind of realizes like, oh wait, yeah, he's a Marine Medal of Honor winner, like no matter what happens, he's going free. And you can just see that she just understands that she's gotta get out, and it just all comes together. And yeah, Michael Corleone, I still think he's one of the greatest. You know, some people see him as an anti-hero. No, he's a villain.
Yeah.
he's a villain. I don't know. I mean, I get the circumstances pulled him into it, yet it's still, you know, he could have done something else. Nick, what's your number two?
Yeah, he's probably not a villain, or like hasn't done anything villainous in the first act.
Yeah.
And maybe even in the second act.
Yeah.
But by the third act of the first movie, like, come on.
Yes.
Well, that's why he's but that's why I think he's so fascinating, is that he starts off as 180 degrees from where he ends up. Like, now is he not a villain, but he's like, I want no part of this.
Right.
You know.
Well, you know, it's interesting too. He's a Marine, so he shares a thing with mafia members, and that it's a group of people who see themselves as separate, as highly dedicated, as having a code, and it's in an almost cult-like atmosphere of ritual, and especially how they become initiated. Yes, yeah, closed thing, and this sense of authority that they kind of have a code that gives them this false moral sense of, which, man, that's not a, that's gonna, hopefully that doesn't offend any of our more pro-military listeners. However, I'm more mean, just, you know, this is a secret.
Not saying that it applies to everyone in the armed services, certainly, but there is documented, you know, abuse, certainly. I mean,
and just that idea of being separate and being this kind of special class.
Yeah, I mean, you can see the same thing within, I mean, any closed system, be it the Catholic Church, or not to, again, offend more people, or Penn State's football, you know, I mean, that's when you get into trouble with, I don't know if I would, I don't know.
Well, hopefully this, you know, we mentioned the Catholic Church, hopefully it isn't this
episode. Yeah, this episode doesn't get erased.
We drive home safe, right?
Nick, what's your number two?
My number three is the Parallax Corporation in the movie The Parallax View, which I just watched for the first time like a week ago. So this is another one of the 70 conspiracy thriller movies in the same vein as like 3 Days of the Condor or something like that. So Warren Beatty plays a reporter who's investigating a senator had been killed a few years ago, like assassinated. And all the people, it's pointed out to him by someone else who's paranoid because all the people who were there, like 6 of them have died recently under mysterious or maybe not mysterious circumstances. Things that maybe seem like somebody had a heart attack, but they were pretty young, things like that. And then that person dies. So Warren Beatty starts investigating and he starts uncovering certain other secrets and what ultimately ends up being the Parallax Corporation's plan is almost a MacGuffin for the movie. It's just something that's driving his character to dig deeper and to go to deeper lengths during his investigation. But it's a really good thriller. There was one scene in the middle of this movie that just had my heart racing, which very rarely happens to me watching movies, but it was just the suspense was built up so perfectly that I sat up in bed and was like locked in. It's a really good movie, so I would definitely recommend checking out The Parallax View. Mm. Kyle, what's your number two?
My number two is just The Joker in The Dark Knight, mostly because I like that he doesn't really have a plan. He just like wants to create chaos. And while he does sort
some
of work,
people just want to watch the world burn.
Oh, that was excellent.
That's the size of a tangerine.
Oh, you're both excellent.
Yeah, you're just only you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
we're both just stealing the bit from The Trip.
Yeah. Which is the movie I haven't even seen. I've just seen scene.
Yeah, well, you've seen the best part.
But it's funny that like he always says that he doesn't really plan things out, but getting rid of the commissioner and the judge who is working on that case and getting the people on the boats and all that, it was like it was so perfectly planned out still.
That's a really good point.
Yeah,
he had to plant bombs.
Yeah, and when he tried to take Harvey Dent was being transported somewhere in those armored vehicles and he managed to take those out. But yeah, it's I like his motivation. It was just like chaos more than anything, which is cool. Great villain.
I'm not going to be able to recall the actual graphic novel or issue yet. There's a take on it's within the story that a doctor or some psychologist says that the Joker basically is like he's a genius. Yet the way his mind works, he does things in like this like precise like in a way that's chaotic seemingly. Yet everything awesome. Will like come together and it's all like calculated in his subconscious.
Even to him it's chaos.
Yeah, yeah. But in reality, it all will work out. It's just to us and everybody else. It looks like.
Have we talked
because about- he's at this genius level?
That's awesome.
You know, psychopath basically.
Have we talked about our thoughts of the movie coming out, the Joker?
We did.
I feel like we touched on it.
Okay,
we split.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
I'm all in. I'm always going to be all in. Yeah, right.
Thamo would be your number two.
My number two is for The Greater Good, and that is from Hot Fuzz. where I think my favorite part about this is that there's a whole theory about why all the murders were happening and who was doing them by the protagonist that ends up being overly complicated and wrong. And at the end of the day, spoiler alert, it's just to win best community. And so anything that might lead them away from winning best community gets taken out in the most brutal and efficient means possible. It's endlessly creepy and again cult-like, but it's also just a hilarious movie and a lot of fun.
It's the best one in the trilogy to me.
I think you might be right. I think
like
definitely better than World's End, Shaun of the Dead.
No, I like Shaun of the Dead better, but
it's rough.
Well, Hot Fuzz is a movie. For me to, even that, like sitting here thinking about it, I'm like, you know what? Based on especially like last week, Better with Time. I think Hot Fuzz just slightly it means more for some reason. And then whereas World's End, I think World's End had like it meant too much. Like, you know, it was too much about them as actors, and you know,
yeah, I do agree
back
that
on themselves.
I was going to say Hot Fuzz definitely got better with age for me. Shaun of the Dead just started at such a peak that it's hard for that to have also gotten much better with age. I still like Shaun more, but like Hot Fuzz, so fun.
It's so fun.
Yeah,
I need to revisit Shaun of the Dead to see if not that it matters which one's. I mean, they're both high up there for me. Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like World's End, especially in light of what you just said about the evil plan. I mean, it's the same movie as Hot Fuzz in a lot of ways. It's a combination of both of one and two. And
yeah, okay. I could say that. And Body Snatchers, I would say that. Eva, your number two.
My number two is from 1928. It's West of Zanzibar. It's a Todd Browning film with Lon Chaney. And it's another revenge evil plan that the Lon Chaney's character has kidnapped this baby and has... And now, after, you know, maybe like 15, 16 years, summoned this man who wronged him previously by running off with the woman he loved and marrying her and having this baby. So he's got that baby. It's this guy's daughter. And he introduces her back to him, and she comes like staggering in. We get the impression for, you know, a 1928 film that she's, drug and alcohol addicted in some way. She's like woozy and just a mess, and she's a prostitute. And he introduces her to her, and he's like, oh, you know, you like this girl, and then he tells her it's his daughter. In the play that it's based on, I think that she was syphilitic. She was like tertiary syphilis. And his plan blows up in his face in a big way by the end. West of Zanzibar. Todd Browning.
Tertiary syphilis. The worst of all the syphilidities.
The syphili.
Congenital might be.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But in terms of primary, secondary, and tertiary, I mean, you got to go with primary if given a choice.
If you have to have one.
It's kind of like the choice between the two Hodgkins, right?
Not Hodgkins and...
Yeah, there's Hodgkins. A good Hodgkins and a bad Hodgkins, right?
I don't know.
I think wasn't that a Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah.
There's a good Hodgkins and a bad Hodgkins.
Yeah. Well.
So my number two runner up goes to The Skrulls, Secret Invasion. Just because it's awesome. I mean, they, you know, infiltrated heroes going back decades, and it was a great retcon. And it was all over basically like religious extremism and coming after like Iraq and all that stuff. And Bush, that was huge. However, number two, I'm going to go with Ozymandias from The Watchmen.
Nice.
Just because, man, as comics go, what's a better evil plan than that? Especially evil plan for a utopian ideal. I mean, I couldn't think of one that was better. And I mentioned Doom a lot. There's a moment where he takes over the Earth, and it's like he turns it into an utopia, and he just gets bored. The Watchmen, just great. I mean, the biggest problem with the movie is not keeping that ending, and apparently
You didn't like the ending?
Well, they didn't. It's not the ending that is in the comic.
Are you referring to the creature versus the explosions? Yeah. I don't know.
I think the creature is just so much more in tune with the ugly absurdity of the of the proceedings in general and what they were trying to say, you know, with the whole thing. It's just so much more over the top and
I think more shocking. It might have been too much for the film. I don't know.
I mean, from a budget perspective, I don't think they could have ever pulled that off.
That's a good point, yeah.
I think that, and just from a storytelling perspective, too, the film couldn't have supported it. Yeah, the movies, I didn't like it at all.
You didn't like it at all? I thought that they glorified the violence too much mm-hmm. for what the backbone of the story is. Right. Besides that, I did love Rorschach's portrayal. I thought that guy nailed it.
I think, so have you seen anything for the new... The series,
just like the little teaser trailer.
Yeah. I think what they seem. I mean, speaking of Proud Boys earlier,
that trailer's Dark incredible. Knight,
yeah.
Or last episode, speaking of the Dark Knight and the Proud Boys and the Rise of the All Right, like tying Rorschach in with
that was what, the vibe I got. It was the Sons of Batman, brilliant. Straight up. Yep,
brilliant because that is Rorschach.
Yeah,
Rorschach is 100% the All Right.
Well, he's totally. Yeah, he's totally the like if Batman were a real dude. This would be him. Like he mm-hmm. wouldn't be like he'd be. He would stink because he's obsessed. He wouldn't be going home to shower. You know. Anyhow.
Yeah. Apparently,
and everything ending, is black and white. That's why he wears the. That's why that fabric was such a big deal to him. Is that there was no gray. No gray. Like it's absolutes. Anyhow, sorry. Yeah,
I was just gonna say that apparently the ending will stick a little closer to the graphic novel, even though a bunch of other stuff has changed.
So it's.
Watchmen is almost, they're seeing it as, like, they're trying to update it to, like, it's not set in the 80s anymore. And it's going to be weird.
It's going to be the actual graphic novel, though. I for some reason, I assume this was post.
It's closer, apparently, in tone. Yet, at the same time, they're changing all these, like, key elements. So we'll see what happens.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Nick, what is your number two?
My number two is the movie Night of the Hunter. And Robert Mitchum plays a reverend named Harry Powell, who is based on a real guy who seemed like a real jerk. His shtick was to marry widows and then kill them and take their money and skip out on town and rinse and repeat.
The Lord has a plan for him.
Yeah.
He brings those women to him.
So... Yeah, he's not just evil, but he also has a delusion, or justifies with a delusion. I don't even know how much he really believes it, that he's a reverend who's...
Divinely
motivated. Yeah, right. So how much does he actually think that that's true, or how much is he going, oh yeah, like since I can do this... It must be that God has granted me the permission to do this. My reading on it's probably more of the latter, but not that relevant. A quote from Adam Kempinar, who's the host of Film Spotting, refers to it as a Southern Gothic masterpiece about the insidiousness of shame, and with a narrative driven by a con man obsessed with money, claiming moral authority, who has issues with women, not at all timely.
I don't suppose you've read the book.
I have not. I don't read much.
LeVar
Burton.
Waldorf school.
Yeah, is that because you went to a Waldorf school and they didn't teach you until you got all your adult teeth?
Yeah. No, I learned how to read. I learned how to read before I went to.
It's a good thing. Yep.
I didn't, and I
you struggled.
Yeah, I struggled. Yeah.
You needed to do your exercises.
Yeah.
I was too busy learning about gnomes.
Well, you guys are in phenomenal shape.
So this movie, according to Cahiers du Cinéma, which is a French film magazine, I think it's where Truffaut and Godard actually started, was writing for Cahiers du Cinéma. They named it as the second best film.
Full stop. Mm-hmm.
Second best film.
Oh, it's strong.
Yeah.
And talk about a film that got better with time. It was a disaster when it was released. It was the first film that Charles Laughton directed.
It was the last.
And the last.
But, I mean, this is before we had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle franchise. This is before Avatar. Like, there's a lot of movies that have come out since.
What do you mean, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle franchise? What are you trying to say?
Michael Bay? Are you digging
the Michael? Oh, I thought you meant the original.
No.
Like one and two.
Yeah, just one and two. Yeah, I'm with you.
Wait, are we not Turtles in Japan or whatever it was called?
Well, Turtles in Time is not.
I think Turtles in Time this should be reevaluated because the set design on that is like too good.
I need to rewatch
like, the costume. It's like,
I just remember
how is it so detailed and beautiful.
I wonder if there's a bunch of like amazing like Kurosawa references.
There probably is. I haven't seen it since the 90s.
Yeah, you watch it now and it probably blows your mind. It's all just like it's Seven Samurai and you're like we didn't realize it at the time.
It's raining really hard, but like,
yeah.
And like, they're like, I can't believe the story. And then like the one guy, instead of having a baby, he has four little turtles.
Did you guys see Samurai Batman?
I
haven't watched it yet.
Is it good? That's pretty cool. It gets super weird.
Nice.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kyle, what's your number one evil plan?
My number one evil plans are the two plans that led to the red and purple wedding. Just big moments in that show. And I think it was the purple wedding where we didn't figure out who was in charge of it till like
way later,
which is cool because ideas would be thrown around a lot. And yeah,
I think
it wasn't totally off. Like I thought,
yeah, it was.
There was
what
a knowing look, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was what like, I. It was what was implied, I think.
But I feel like she was confronted at some point and she didn't admit it initially, but I don't remember exactly. But yeah, the Red Wedding is just horrible. And yeah, had to be, I'm assuming, planned perfectly by a real sleazy guy of a person. But yeah.
You gotta love that. Joffrey is such a great portrayal and character. That like the actor playing him just retired from acting.
Yeah.
Did he really?
Like how do you know you got to think like for the rest of his life? Well, thankfully he'll probably grow out of it because he's still kind of young.
People are going to recognize Bolton, him. Like, what's he going to do?
Man,
I can't see him in anything else.
No,
he's like he's going to torture people.
Yeah,
dead. Is it Jack Gleason is the name of the guy?
That's
Joffrey.
Yeah.
He just figured people are going to recognize him as that for the rest of his life. So terrible.
What?
He's a chode of a character, and like
total tin can.
He's got the benefit of like sounding nothing like him.
Yeah, that's true.
Like
he's a lot different. He kind of carries himself totally differently.
Yeah.
He pretty much like have to, otherwise Irish he's accent. Getting attacked on the street because people hate.
Was
that
he getting
character.
Attacked?
No, I'm just. Yeah. I imagine.
I would have.
You would have. Well,
I mean, he was definitely attacked online.
Yeah. If I ever see that kid, oh boy,
man,
you guys are playing it wrong. I'll become his best friend. Be close to power. my also misunderstanding. But he's not actually the king. Is that okay?
Then what would be your number one?
Not quite as dark. I got Pinky in the Brain. Every night they do the same thing that they do every night, which is try to take over the world. And I honestly don't remember much beyond that, except that it was wacky shenanigans on the Animaniacs, WB.
And their own spinoff.
And they had their own spinoff, but I
how
never.
Many, how many cartoon that. Spinoffs have there really been? Like that, Family Guy did one with Cleveland. That's all I can think of.
Sorry. You didn't like Cleveland? I never watched it.
I never watched it.
I think like the Hanna-Barbera cartoons started out.
Oh, were they?
Too.
The original spinoff,
Tiny Toon Adventures. That was you could call that a.
Not was it really. A spinoff? It was like it was, a reimagining.
It was a reimagining, but then there was the. They came. Oh.
Did they have a
spin-off? No, it was what's the girl who likes to like
Elmira?
Yeah.
Elvira? She, was it
Elmira? Elvira.
Elvira.
It's like a yeah.
She was the guy two. From she was Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
I'm sorry.
That was long technical times.
There's been a couple spinoffs.
Okay.
Eva, what's your number one?
My number one, because I'm not going to stop talking about it, is from the greatest year in horror films, 1932, and it's Island of Lost Souls. So we see, and here's Charles Laughton again. Charles Laughton's Dr. Moreau. That's funny. He has several evil plans that we find. He's been on this island basically like forcing social Darwinism onto animals, where he believes that, you know, a white man is the like pinnacle of evolution, and so he can force animals to this state of being through torture, which he's doing. He's well on this, you know, in the process of doing that when we meet him. And then onto one of these animals, he's going to, as he said, mate her with, you know, a man. And when that doesn't work out, then he has one of the beast men, Oron, who he's going to dispatch to rape one of the women who comes to the island so he can pull this off. And his, like, kind of sidekick, his disgraced doctor sidekick, is really, like, you know, he's going along with this whole thing. He's been cool with everything up until the point where he's going to, like, have Oron rape the other woman. So once we're raping a white woman, now it's too far. You know, now all of a sudden he's got a problem with what Dr. Moreau's doing.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, it's...
He was okay with the other rape.
All of the rest of what they were doing was... okay, but we can't have like miscegenation. And it's, I think people, you know, people talk about the 1990s one, people don't really talk about the 1970s one anymore, but Island of Lost Souls is a great, great horror movie. I think it's a lot more watchable than like Dracula or Frankenstein to a modern viewer. The plot's a lot, it's, you know, it's pretty creepy, it's pretty violent, and it moves pretty quickly. I just love it.
Did you see the documentary about the 1990s version?
By I have. Chance?
Yeah. Wild, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. He's a weird dude.
Yeah. Well, chaos maybe. Magic, right?
Right. Yeah. It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe fill in for the listeners what's strange about that documentary.
Well, there's so many things that are strange about it. Right. But most of them are... the director, well, the original director, who believes that he was able to like summon this project into being.
And the original director of Island of Dr. Moreau, the 90s version, was fired and then haunted the set.
Haunted the set. Like he like like literally set up camp in the wild.
Literally, like, right. Like stalked the production of the film.
And actually got back on set in costume. Meanwhile, you had all these extras dressed up as animals just getting sloshed because they couldn't film half the time. It was
a Marlon Brando.
And Marlon Brando was just like at the apex of like, I don't care.
What about the proposed ending that he wanted?
Yes, he wanted to take off the hat and reveal that he had a dolphin head.
Yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Frankly, that's how messed up this documentary is.
Frankly, I think that would have made a better movie.
I don't know if you can.
I think if he had been revealed as an intelligent dolphin, it would have been a better film.
My
which is a lot of Marlon Brando movies,
including Godfather. Like if he was had he been an intelligent dolphin, he was. Of course, he died amongst the oranges. Like he's not in water. Like
the orange fell in his blowhole.
Yeah. We'll take your number one whenever you're ready.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of things that I'm not going to stop talking about.
Yeah, speaking of blowholes.
And speaking of underwater creatures. So my number one pick is Black Manta. Because I'm not going to stop talking about this until
the movie gets made.
Until somebody writes the story or DC hires me to write it. Basically, Black Manta's real origin is not that he's trying to take over an undersea kingdom because of money. It's revealed in one of the early appearances that he's trying to create an underground kingdom for black people so that they're free from oppression. And then DC, like, this is like mid-70s, 80s, they like just backed off of it. And I still think it is the best, like, I mean, especially for Aquaman, like, nobody cares. About Aquaman, let's be honest. I mean, people only care about him now because of Jason Momoa. Yeah, the real Aquaman story is Black Manta and his underground kingdom of liberation. DC, if you're listening, you know how to get a hold of me. No, you don't. However, I'm easy to find. Nick, what's your number one?
My number one is the villain's plan in the movie Vertigo. it basically requires that, and I guess mild spoilers for Vertigo, but a guy has to assume he understands the motivations of someone he went to college with and hasn't seen in presumably decades. He has to assume that he's going to fall in love with this woman pretty quickly, and that he's going to almost save her, and then not quite save her from dying from a large height, and then kind of drop it after that and not look into anything any further. And that's the guy's plan. And like, in fairness, almost works, almost pulls it off.
You just opened a whole can of worms, because I totally forgot about like Alfred Hitchcock Presents and all the amazing plans that were like in there. Oh man,
there's a great episode of Hitchcock Presents that's based on a story written by Davis Grubb, who wrote Night of the Hunter. It's called Where the Woodbine Twineth, and it's one of the stories that scared my mom worse than anything in her entire life. And a couple years ago, I found it on Hulu and showed it to her, because she had remembered like the part that scared her. She didn't remember that the girl in the story is named Eva.
Oh,
like it completely like wiped that out, and it was fun. But Davis Grubb's a great writer.
Awesome. So those were our top five EO plans. We've got some more feedback to get to. We've got some Twitter feedback. Somebody called The Greatest Story Ever Played on Twitter wrote, social experiment, if you come across this tweet, name the podcast that made you fall in love with podcasts. And Savvy Grayson said, definitely at On the Tropes.
Aww.
Which is
that's us.
That's our podcast.
That's our podcast.
Guys, that's us.
That's us.
That's me.
Did they mean to say On the Rocks?
Ew.
What a crappy show.
So yes, we thank you.
We
very
are
much,
rapidly approaching episode 200.
Us or you?
You guys already passed it, right?
Yeah,
we passed it.
Yeah, what are we going to do for episode 200? I have an idea.
What did we do for 100?
We did like a multitude of lists. It was like favorite song lyrics.
Oh yeah, that was that. That was.
I think favorite scenes.
Song lyrics is a bad episode for me.
I think that should be the one where you have to write somebody else's list.
Oh.
I don't like that idea.
More Twitter feedback. This is from Lion of Judah 613. Somebody had posted, this was like a retweet of somebody else posting like music notes. When the moon hits your eye and you hear Pale White Guys, and then a picture of That's a Podcast. So Lion of Judah wrote, at On the Tropes, my favorite four middle-aged white guys podcast.
Nice.
So I accused them of violently attacking us.
Yeah, I like that though, because that means that there's culture developing around,
But they said they've been listening since MacGuffin, which I think was episode two or three.
Wow.
Definitely
episode two.
So that is definitely, that's a callback from, we referenced Wednesday's iTunes review. That was years ago. So this is someone who definitely has done their homework.
Jeez Louise. Thank you.
But now we're five middle-aged white guys.
Yep.
And this is from our boy John Ducker. He says, hi guys. I know it's been a while. I've been really tied up these past few weeks planning and constructing an escape room for my an escape room activity for my church youth group. I really want to build an escape room.
I was so, when I read that, I'm like, man, I'm really interested in the kind of event that John Ducker would put together. Like that, those kids must have had so much fun.
Yeah. I hope that it was mostly like pun based.
Yeah. And not like not like those Hell House things that they used to do. Do you remember those Christian, like...
There's an amazing documentary called...
Yeah, it
called,
is
I think
really
it's called Hell House.
Those are really good. However, they were basically like...
This is what happens if you sin. You go to hell. Like,
yeah, it was... Because I remember this from church. Basically, you couldn't go to like a haunted house because it was too haunted. Like with evil. Yeah. Or, like the devil.
Like promoted evil.
Yeah. So they basically would have a thing where you'd go to a thing called the Hell House that would show you, much like Chick Tracts, there would be like a scenario of drunk driving, and it would have like really graphic images of like the dead bodies or like a drug overdose, and then it would show like people getting tortured in hell. and, like, actors acting.
It sounds like fun.
But, I mean, it was stuff like...
It sounds pretty scary, yeah. I think... Yeah.
And it was, like, an intense, like... I mean, some of them were things like looking at pornography, which, you know...
They show you some porn?
Yeah, like a guy would be, like, on a computer. That's a real life example.
Don't do this. Here, we're going to show you 5 minutes. And don't do drugs. Here's what they taste like.
Yeah. No, it wasn't probably that. Or what was another one?
There's always an abortion.
That was the one I was looking for. Yeah, always an abortion. Yeah.
And like seriously graphic, way more graphic than anything you would get in a real haunted house.
Yeah, but it's like justified because you're saving souls allegedly.
It sounds fun to me.
It's part of a long, like religious roadshow tradition.
Mm. Yeah. Anyways, I hope that John's was mostly puns.
No abortions.
Mostly puns without abortions.
Yeah.
Oh.
He says it ended up going really well, nice. But now that it's over, I can start catching up on my troping, starting with some top fives. So, Silence is Golden. Simon's Cat YouTube videos. Number four is Interstellar 5555.
Oh, love that so much.
How can the music video to a Daft Punk album be Silence is Golden? Because you only get the album music, no sound effects, no dialogue, yet you can still follow the story.
I would argue that is a silent film.
Hmm.
Because it's...
With, like, the soundtrack, the way... Awesome.
I love them. I love it.
He says the intro to Up. No dialogue, but probably the best, most effective story Pixar has ever told. Number two, another Pixar, WALL-E. A huge chunk of the movie has no dialogue. I think by far the best chunk of the movie has no dialogue. Mm-hmm. Once people get involved, it kind of drops off for me. But man, the first act of that movie. And then Journey Inside, rarely completely silent, but frequently nothing but quiet environmental noise that feels even more oppressive. Special mention to the inexplicable explosion machine in Inside and how it sucks away the sound before shockwaves hit.
Yeah.
That is a fun, creepy little game.
Did you finish it?
I never finished
it. You got pretty far, though.
I got pretty far. I never finished it. I have it. I should probably finish it at some point. Sequel Hook. All examples of video games with orphaned sequel hooks, aka Stillborn franchise, in order of how interested I am seeing it continued. Number five, Call of Duty Ghosts.
Mm.
Number four, Sin Episodes. What is that? S-I-N with a lowercase I but a capital N. Emergence?
Is that an anime?
It sounds like an anime, okay. Yeah.
Number three, PsyOps, the Mindgate Conspiracy. Number two, Prince of Persia, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, Half-Life 2, Episode 2.
Ooh. Yeah.
And this is the original Half-Life, came out in 98, and the cliffhanger of Half-Life 2, Episode 2 came out in 2007. So we've had more years of waiting for Episode 3 than we had from the start of the series so far. No sign that Valve will do anything about it.
Well, John, today's your lucky day, because I'd like to confirm Episode 3...
Is not happening.
Is happening right now.
Is it?
No.
Oh. I wouldn't know. This email, like I said, we're a little bit behind on emails. It could have dropped in the meantime.
That's true.
Yeah. Tearjerker, there are some common techniques to tug on the heartstrings, so I've tried to pick one of the most prominent examples of each. Tearjerkers would have been a great topic for the 200th episode if we wanted to like just bring it.
People really like that episode.
Yeah. What did I watch lately? Oh, it was Knock Down the House, the ending of that movie, with AOC talking about her dad. Just like
Toy Story 4 got me to cry.
It wrecked me. Number five, Shadow of the Colossus.
No.
Aggro falling into the chasm.
Yeah.
Number four is I Am Legend. We all know what it is. We don't need to talk about it.
Was it the true ending or the
not the ending at all?
Not the ending. No, Thema knows.
Oh god.
Yeah,
let's keep moving, man.
Let's not talk about it. Dead Island.
I'll tell you after
the trailer.
The trailer was so much better than the game deserved, and could not have been more different in tone.
Yeah.
Number two is the montage from Up.
Mm.
And number one, I like this one, World War Z, the book, not the film.
Ooh, man, that's a strong pick.
Awful things happen to horses.
That's a tearjerker?
Awful things happen to horses, dogs, parents, children, loved ones. And while films and video games can use every trick of sad music and emotional acting to tug on your heartstrings, somehow World War Z has multiple chapters that break right through my British stiff upper lip and have me in literal tears, even on my second and third read. I can't think of any other book that does that to me.
Man, I seriously think that that is one of the best books of our era. Like, in so
it's
many
so
ways. Like, it's so weird because, like, it feels, like, important. Like, all of the things that happen, like, and I've been saying for years, you could sub in any disaster
like climate change. You could sub in a lot of stuff mm-hmm. for zombies. And like there are certain things that happen on a global scale and how people relate and how societies like react that like are just, it's just smart. That book is so smart.
Yeah. And he's got a couple honorable mentions for that. Ori and the Blind Forest. He said the intro and the ending, and he says, Kyle, you should play it.
I don't have access to it because it's only on Xbox, unless it gets a Switch version, which would be sweet.
And The Last of Us.
Yeah.
And then he's got some gaslighting. Number 5 is Doctor Who, Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. Number 4 is Mission Impossible, which is a common tactic for the IMF with like the face pulling.
Oh.
They do a lot of tricks with that. Number 3 is The Twits by Roald Dahl. I think we've talked about that recently, right? Did we talk about that on that like episode?
I know Roald Dahl came up.
Yeah, The Twits is pretty good. Matilda, also by Roald Dahl. I think I think I talked about the movie. He says, the book, not the movie. I've never actually seen the movie. I really should.
Yeah.
Matilda's super fun.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, the books, I don't want to be one of those people that says the book's better, but.
I mean,
is it different?
Roald Dahl books are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I don't feel bad saying about him. And number 1 is Batman Beyond Shriek, the episode where Batman figures out that the voice in his head isn't his own. Because it calls him Bruce, and that's not what he calls himself.
So great. Man. Awesome. Is that much bad respect.
Shriek is the sound, the Batman sound guy. Love. Where they take, he takes all the sound out. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, is that... Never mind. Oh.
Have you seen Midsommar yet?
I have not gotten a chance to watch it. I heard... I read a review on First Movie's Death that it's a subtle remake of Texas Chainsaw. And I just saw Texas Chainsaw. Like, I probably just saw Texas Chainsaw.
I don't know if I could
week.
See that in theaters.
I might go see it tomorrow because I'm like,
yeah, I'm with Kyle.
I'm dodging spoilers on Twitter all the time. Like,
I'll be at work tomorrow.
Yeah, it depends on whether or not I want to watch that or the Home Run Derby. We'll see.
So, okay. They're saying Texas Chainsaw, which is surprising because looking at it, I'm like, oh, this is straight up.
They're doing Wicker a good Man. Wicker the, Man, yeah. They're good.
Doing it's compelling evidence.
Oh, really?
It's kind of almost undeniable. Like,
wow.
Like scenes, like shot for shot in some spaces.
Okay. Nellie read the review because she wanted to see if she thought she would be able to tolerate it.
And she doesn't. She can't.
And she said, absolutely not.
I like how they're, yeah, it seems like the trailers are not showing enough. Like, in a good way. They're not showing a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to it. Anyways, thanks for the feedback, listeners. And if you have feedback for us, including your own list of evil plans, let us know at onthetropes@gmail.com or facebook.com/onthetropes or over on Twitter. And you can always learn more about the tropes at tvtropes.org. And you can buy our stuff at redbubble.com/people/onthetropes. And write us some reviews and stuff. Because we like them. Anyways, I've been Nick.
I've been Sarah.
Eva.
Demo.
And Kyle.
And oh man, I had a whole episode to think of a foreshadowing joke. But anyways, that's what we're doing next episode.